Hello and welcome to the Adventure Games Podcast. My name is Shorsha Dunbar and I'm your host.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Adventure Games Podcast. And I am with two good friends of mine, Matt Latham and Kieran Childs. First of all, hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm glad to be back, sir.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. And Kieran as well, how are you doing?
Yeah, really good, thanks. And how are you, Shorsha?
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's been a while since we've been... I know last month I recorded with Johnny Nice, the first time he spoke as well. He recorded him too. It was great. You know, he's also really, really, really knowledgeable about adventure games as well. But it's great to be chatting to you guys as well. This first time since the beginning of January that we spoke, we did our adventure games of the year. There's been quite a few adventure games released. And we're going to talk about some of those. But anything you guys would like to mention, any news or anything that you guys have been up to? Or Kieran, you look like you want to say something.
Well, I was itching after that Adventure Games of the Year episode. I was itching to talk about so many more, and so I ended up doing that bonus episode.
Yes. Well,
just all the games that you didn't let me talk about.
You make me sound like a dictator. I mean, the reason is because we would have been here for 5 hours. I mean, I would have been okay with it, but with we do have to go to sleep at some time. I mean, I know that I could also spend 5 hours just speaking. but if you are a member of, we'll talk about this in a little bit, if you are a member of our Patreon, one of the exclusives you can listen to is Kieran talking about his top 10 adventure games of 2023. We spoke a little bit about our top three. We might do it a little bit different because I'd like to do like an official Adventure Games podcast top 10 maybe towards the end of this year, but that's not for another few months. But Kieran, you did run through your top 10 adventure games, and one of those you're going to be speaking about later on. So which game will you be reviewing later on, Kieran?
So today I'm going to be talking about Chance of Sennar, which got a whole load of hype last year, but didn't get around to reviewing it just because it's incredible. It's quite long. It's quite difficult. Very, very interesting game.
Yeah, no, very nice. And Matt, what will you be talking about in this episode?
I'm going to be talking about a demo, but more specifically the demo of the Perfect Tide sequel, so Perfect Tide Station to Station.
Yeah, no, I've heard. I still have to play the first Perfect Tides game. Laura Kress of this parish as well had a fun... Well, I haven't watched her interview with Meredith. Is it Meredith Chan?
Meredith Gran.
Thank you. I haven't watched it, not because I don't want to, because I want to play the game first. But I haven't had a chance yet. I know everyone keeps telling me it's amazing. Dave Gilbert, Francisco Gonzalez also loved it. And so I really, really need to get around to playing it. But hopefully you will be talking about it, the demo of the sequel. So I'm looking forward to hearing about that. I will be reviewing two short games that I've got around to playing. Looking up, I see only a ceiling, and The Light in the Darkness I'll be talking about a little bit as well. So first in news, there is three kind of pieces of big news in the last few weeks or so. We'll start with the kind of negative news and get that over and done with, I think. Have either of you guys played Disco Elysium?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Perfect. Well,
played a lot of Disco Elysium.
Well, it was. I mean, we've spoken about it. When it came out, myself, Thomas and Laura, at the time, we spoke a lot about it. Thomas and Laura, they really pushed me to play it. They said it was a fantastic game, and I did. I actually started playing it, but I didn't really like it that much. I found it overwhelming. Now, it was, I think, during COVID, beginning of COVID, so there's other things on my mind, shall I say. But then I think 2021, January, I took a week off. Work. We couldn't go out anywhere, so I spent that week, I dedicated that week to playing Disco Elysium, one of the best and greatest weeks of my life. I mean, probably exaggerated slightly, but yeah, one of the best games I think released certainly in modern times. But unfortunately for the studio, it hasn't been going well for the developers. Now, we've spoken a little bit before, the three main people involved in the game, they left under acrimonious circumstances a couple of years ago now, I believe, and they are taking legal action against the owners of Zaum, who are the developers and publishers, and the publishers and owners took countersued them, said that they created a toxic atmosphere. I'm not going to go into all of that. We've spoken about it. There is a documentary on YouTube. I would recommend people watch. We put in Disco Elysium documentary, I believe from Noclip, who also had a fantastic documentary about Monkey Island. But it's a fascinating story. But there's been new developments. A couple of weeks ago, Zaum have reportedly laid off a quarter of staff, and they have cancelled their latest Disco Elysium standalone expansion, which, I mean, it's latest in the long line of layoffs, but I think that this is a bit different in that, I mean, first of all, I'm still surprised that this company exists from what I saw of the documentary. And it is very sad for the staff. So I don't know if you guys want to say anything. I don't know, Kieran, do you have any thoughts on these layoffs?
Yeah, it's a big, messy, complicated story. I could also recommend the documentary. I thought it was a People Makes Games one that I saw.
Oh, was it? Could be. I think it was that. Sorry,
best way of understanding it, a very balanced and complicated treatment. Just an unpleasant story all around. Yeah,
I mean, just the way that it's the finances and I didn't really understand it. It's just the way it was done. Just, I don't know, just a lot going on with, you know, with the company. And this is the latest. To people I feel sorry enough, you know, sorry for most are the people who are there because they have been targeted. They've been getting abuse and threats and all from fans of Disco Elysium who support the developers. But they've, as far as I can see, they've done nothing wrong. just because they're still there, you know, but they need a job. They need to make money somehow as well. But yeah, Matt, do you have any thoughts or comments on?
Not really. I still need to see the documentary. So my knowledge of what's happening with Zaum is very kind of limited. So I'm not exactly sure what the issues are. I keep meaning set aside about
5 hours,
2.5 hours. Yeah, so about 2.5 hours long or something for the documentary and stuff. And yeah, which is, and like all this, I just know there's like a shadow that's cast over Disco Elysium, which is really a bit of a shame because it is one of the better examples of a narrative game that I've played. And I'm trying to keep myself in a bubble, so I don't want that bubble to burst. But eventually, I'm gonna have to listen. I'm gonna have to watch that documentary and just add context to things.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating story. It could be a game all by itself, but it's a miracle that I think Disco Elysium itself exists, the game, considering everything. But yeah, no, very sad. It's more layoffs, and I mean, I don't know what else to say. Hopefully that things can pick up again sometime, that companies can realize that maybe laying off staff isn't always the answer. But look, we shall see. But, well, possible better news is another game starting with Disc, Discworld. Have you guys played the original Discworld games?
Oh, yes.
Oh wow! I tried so hard. It doesn't seem to be as infamous as certain adventure games, but wow! I think Discworld might be one of the most difficult classic adventures. I found it really, really tough.
Yeah, I haven't played it. Well, I put this up on social media that I got it working on a PlayStation emulator because I got it legally on eBay, the PlayStation 1. Copy of the game, but I just moved house, but I got it up and running finally on my PC through a PlayStation emulator, but now for whatever reason it will not save, so I can play it, but I would need what, about 10 hours, 12 hours which I don't know, maybe some weekend, but it's I still have to figure out how to save it, so I'm still looking, you know, I still have to try and figure out more how to play it and how to save it as well on a PC. But yeah, there was some, I mean, it's not really news. People have been reading this news, and I think that they've been kind of misinterpreting. So, but Time Extension did an interview a few weeks ago with the developer of the Discworld games, Greg Barnett. And he said, now I quote, "I don't want to give you a scoop, but a Discworld re-release may happen. It's on the cards. It may happen. And then it could advance to new versions of them." So that's very exciting. It's so this was in kind of limbo because people didn't know who owned the rights to the games. And according to Greg Barnett, he said, "It turns out that 50% reverted to me as a creator because the company Perfect Entertainment has been closed for 10 years. Now you might be asking, who owns the other 50%? Well, it turns out it's the Crown. So now, he said it was King Charles, but I read somewhere else that it's not exactly King Charles, that it's like an office somewhere in the UK. I don't know too much myself, but he seemed confident enough that it might be happening. He said they're having discussions and something may be happening down the track. He said a re-release or a remaster, but it's obviously a complicated process you're dealing when you're dealing with the Crown. Now, he also did mention that Terry Pratchett sold the rights to different companies of, I think, Discworld. But Rhianna Pratchett, daughter of Terry Pratchett, said, hang on a second now. She's the joint owner of Narrativia, which is a production company, and it controls the multimedia rights to Discworld. And she said, we only have the rights to the characters, not the games themselves. If we did have the rights, then this would be a whole lot easier. We're generally not sure who does own the rights because studios have been bought and sold over the years, along with IP. Last time we investigated this, they were thought to be with Sony, but that's never been fully confirmed. We'd certainly love to see the old games re-release. It's news to us if His Majesty owns 50% of the Discworld games. Who knows what might happen if that's really the case? Maybe he's a fan. So it's positive. Oh, final thing she said is Rhianna Pratchett said no one has signed off everything to anybody. So she said the Discworld rights are still with her. She said, we still own the IP rights. The reason why Greg got the right to do the games was that he came with solid ideas which fitted the nature of Discworld. The simple reason that there has never been a fully fledged Discworld game since then is no one has come to us with the right ideas and resources to actually make it happen. So, I mean, it's positive. Nothing official yet. But would you guys like to see a possible re-release in future of Discworld? You know what? Would you guys play it? What do you guys think, Kieran?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a gorgeous game, and the style and the presentation. Did a really cool thing with the luggage. I can't quite remember, but there was some cool mechanics going on with that. Yeah, and is it Eric Idle does voice,
yeah,
and just does a fantastic job of that. Yeah, it's a real delight.
Yeah, Matt, do you have anything to?
Yeah, I mean, I've always preferred the sequel because I think I played that before the first game. I kind of then did the first game afterwards and I was like, okay, yeah, I thought Discworld 2 was difficult. This is very difficult. But, I mean, yeah, I'd love to see it come back and like become playable again because I think it's technically abandonware at the moment. I don't think you can actually get it somewhere. So like, because I recently covered Discworld 2 last year, asked us about Loom, and I had to. It wasn't easy to play, I'll say that. but yeah, it kind of needs, because I think it's a kind of key interesting area for particularly British adventure games, anyway, because it's 94, it's just before, it's like a few years before Curse, and it's. It kind of gets lost between the golden era and the quote unquote mainstream decline. Mm. And I think a lot of people also forget that it's actually one of like almost, I don't know whether it's exactly a launch title for the PS1, but it was out around that time. I remember reading about it around the launch of the PlayStation when it was on the PS1. So yeah, it's probably one of the least seen launch titles. I think it overshadowed by Broken Sword, I think, when it came
out. Yeah, Broken Sword came on, and that did really well, but got very good reviews on the PlayStation. But yeah, so nothing official has been announced, so people listening don't get your hopes up too much. Nothing official is happening yet, but it would be great if it did. Certainly make my life a lot easier if I could get it on GOG or Steam or anything.
Yeah. So basically, one of the things in that article that you're talking about, it goes, unfortunately, before Ted passed away, him and his agents or somebody had signed every property to either ITV or Prime or BBC literally across the board. Now, recently, I've read quite a few of the Discworld books. I'm currently still going through the City Watch books, and I'm really annoyed that it's taken nearly 37 years for me to actually read them, because they're the best parts of it. And I started watching the BBC version of The Watch and got halfway through the first episode before it's like shutting down iPlayer in disgust, going, what the
I haven't even watched it.
This and part of me kind of wants, okay, if they are, yeah, I can kind of see why Rihanna Pratchett says no one's come to us with a solid idea, because considering what some people have done with it,
completely agree with her. I mean,
it needs to be treated with respect, I think.
Yeah, I think for the record, I believe Rihanna said that, you know, that they still own the rights. She owned the rights to Discworld. I believe that Terry Pratchett sold the rights to, you know, for that series, The Watch. And then I think narratively lost control, and Rihanna didn't have anything to do with it. And he tragically died in the meantime. And yeah, a whole load of stuff happened. The BBC America. And yeah, no, I just have no interest in watching. I've read all the Discworld novels and I would love to play the game, but it doesn't look good. So I can understand why Rihanna doesn't want to just sell or license the rights to just anybody. But look, at least a remaster, it could, you know.
I mean, you can easily do like a whodunit with Vimes or Corporal Carrot, because I've fallen for Corporal Carrot. He's my favorite character in the Discworld novels. He might be my favorite character in fiction. He's my type of character. I want to play as Corporal Carrot.
Others, there's a huge potential with this. You know, you could play as different characters. I mean, you could have RPG even if you wanted to, with different skills. I mean, hey, Rihanna, I've got ideas. I've never made a game before, but hey, I've got loads of ideas if you're listening. If you want to just give me the money to, give me the right to do it. But anyway, hopefully at least a remaster might be on the card, but nothing official has been announced just yet. But it is at least some positive news as well. And sticking with positive news, I think Matt in particular, you played Immortality and you really enjoyed it, I believe, didn't you?
It was my favorite game of that year.
Well, you'll be happy to know that the developer of Immortality, Sam Barlow, has, in classic Sam Barlow fashion, he teased not one but two upcoming projects called, imaginatively titled, Project C and Project D. So Project D looks similar to Immortality. Well, similar seems to be along those lines. But Project C seems to be a survival horror. Now, he also did make Silent Hill Shattered Memories, so he has experience in that. And there are two Steam pages, which I will send to you guys now in the chat. But Project C and Project D, and in typical Sam Barlow fashion, they're like classified information. They are a lot of it is redacted, so we still don't know very much. Now, Sam Barlow did an interview with Kind of Funny podcast as well, where he gave some little bit more information. We still don't know a huge amount though, but again, I think just anything he does at this point is going to be interesting. And I still, again, like Perfect Eyes, what you mentioned, I still have to play Immortality, but which I will at some point. But it's interesting. So, so Matt, what, again, I presume you're happy that Sam Barlow's working on two new games?
Yeah, definitely. I absolutely loved her story. I think her story like took me on a ride. Telling Lies, I perhaps wasn't as keen on, I think, but it still was quite. I've not gone back to replay that after first playing it, but and Immortality is like a masterpiece in kind of storytelling, I think, in terms of how he tries to innovate and pretty much creates this multi-layered story that I really can't say any more of because I really don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I still have to play that.
The less you know about immortality, the better. I mean, looking at this thing, I think Project D, he says it's like there's a lot of stuff that's blanked out. No, sorry, Project D. It's Project C, sorry. It's a new cinematic blank, blank, Sam Barlow, blank, half mermaid. Blank, 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 for the first time ever in a video game. Blank, 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 blank.
Which is classic, Sam Barlow.
Yeah, yeah. Then again, though, we might do an absolute swerve and just say, first time ever in a video game, we do a live action FMV version of Discworld. But maybe he approached Rihanna Pratchett. But
Wow, that would be interesting.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, though, I think. Sam Barlow's pretty much got. He's one of those people that as soon as he puts his name down on something, I'm going to end up going to look into it anyway. So any game he's created director of, I'm going to be there. It'd be like the Fry gift going, give me my money. Project D, I think it's just more or less the same as well.
We don't know, but even the screenshots don't tell us much. But I'm sure there's some clues there. But also, to end the news on a positive note, Half Mermaid, his company, have announced that they are hiring people. So that's great news to hear that the game studio is actually hiring staff and not laying off thousands. Kieran, have you played Immortality or any of Sam Barlow's games?
Yeah, my favorite was Her Story. I thought Her Story was brilliant. I was very impressed with Immortality. Just the inventiveness and just that willingness and the confidence to experiment and be so successful with it that Sam Barlow has is wonderful to see. The Project C and Project D look completely different again to what he's already done, and it's just really exciting.
Yeah. No, well, I need to get on Immortality because it's also available if you have Netflix. They have a games section as well. Quite a few games that I was just going through. Quite a few adventure games. I downloaded Oxenfree. The only thing is, so far, they're only available on mobile. And I don't like playing games on mobile. It's a little bit awkward, I find. I was trying to play Oxenfree on a plane. And, I mean, I'm enjoying it, but just... You know, pointing and clicking on a phone for me isn't as, you know, the same as on a Steam Deck or PC.
I've heard negative reports about the gameplay experience for Immortality on Netflix, that it's probably not as good. It has recently been released on PS5, and it's 16 quid, and I am really tempted to go and buy it again on the PS5 because I've not played it with the controller. I've only played it with the keyboard, and the way that the kind of system works, that it's a lot more responsive apparently to controllers.
I've heard that.
I've never played it that way. I was hitting keys and going frame by frame through video and stuff rather than trying to control the speed with the power of the sensitivity of the triggers and stuff. So I'm really tempted to play it that way. I might wait for it to go down in price again because I have already paid 16 quid for it. I might just wait for it to come on. I might wait for a sale. But
or you could get a controller for the PC.
Yeah, but the PC's upstairs. I don't know.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Gotta go all the way upstairs.
Upstairs.
All the way upstairs.
Oh, I know, all those steps.
Yeah.
So that is Project C and Project D. You can go on Steam and wishlist if you wish. And both those games will be released, and the release dates are to be announced. And Matt, you said that there was a new podcast about adventure games, another competition podcast.
I know, yeah. I mean, they're like buzzies. You wait for years for some, and then suddenly they all appear at once. But I think the growing, there's quite a few coming up now. I'll run through my collection of them at the moment. But Save Your Game was, released, announced properly this week. And it's from YouTuber Pushing Up Roses and comedian Matt Ocamp, who basically are just talking about games in general. So, I think I'm going to assume the majority of the audience this podcast knows who Pushing Up Roses is. They're a podcaster they're a YouTuber who's been covered all sorts of Genji games in the past. Massive Laura Bow, Dagger of Amon-Ra fan as well. There's loads of them. Started to divert into covering all sorts of murder mystery stuff. A lot of Murder She Wrote as well. And it's kind of, and like, it probably hasn't done as many videos as much on Venture Games as they used to do. But yeah, so this is kind of like heading back to that. And I've only just listened to the first episode so far, but and they're covering Perfect Tides as well as kind of some of their favourite stuff as well. So, and there's a lot of love for Curse of Monkey Island, which means automatically I that right or then. But it's nice to see kind of like a podcast and what I class as a podcast being an audio medium. So something I can put on the car and yes. my 10 and I can still listen, but also not stare at something that will cause me to crash it.
Yeah, that's handy.
But, so it's the latest in like it's latest in a growing expansion of audio podcasts to do with adventure games. So Save Your Game, which you can find on all podcast apps.
I think anywhere. Yeah, I've listened to all the episodes. I didn't finish listening to the first episode of that podcast again, certainly not because I didn't like it, but because again, I want to play Perfect Tides before, as I said, watching Laura Kress's interview with the developer and listening to this podcast. But the other podcast there, they have an interview with Julia Minamata about Crimson Diamond, and that was a lot of fun. And they speak about the Steam Next Fest, the games and demos. He's spoken, Matt played over 20 demos, and he spoke about them as well. And they're both seem like really nice people and really funny as well. So, it was. And also, Matt Okamp is, I believe, he writes for the adventure game Hotspot. And they were on this podcast, Joshua and Jack of the adventure game Hotspot. So, segue. You can listen. You can listen to that interview. They had really nice guys. A lot of fun. It's over 2 hours we were chatting, and they also have the Adventure Game Fan Fair in the United States in Tacoma, Washington this July 2024. They've just made their Kickstarter goal, and now one of the stretch goals was, it's probably taken already, but I believe up to 8 people can do an escape room with Ken or Roberta Williams, I'd be terrified because I'm not good at escape rooms. I love them, but I'm terrible at them, and I would be like, oh God. This is terrifying. But
you just leave it to them. Was it Ken and Roberta Williams judge you?
What you need to do is just start climbing. If there's a staircase, just climb up it and just keep falling off.
And
if they start getting frustrated, he goes, well, that's how we feel.
Know how we feel, Roberta.
It's good to see another adventure game podcast come up. I see how I have often treated other music podcasts in the music podcast kind of community, in that like we're all in the same kind of niche thing. And I think there's at least 8 or 9 of them.
Other podcasts that do talk about adventure games and more general games as well.
I was gonna quickly recap. So if
go
anyone
ahead
actually,
before we do talk about the games.
Yeah. So if any
read
so
out
if
the competition.
Curious, yeah, if anyone's curious of all the inferior podcasts to this one, you can listen to them on.
Well, Matt said it, not me. But no, they're all great. They're all absolutely fantastic.
Yes, but so there's this one. There's again, Save Your Game. There's the Adventure Game Hotspot podcast. It's not been updated for ages, but there's the Backstreet Designers podcast. There's the Classic Gamers Guild, the Adventure Game Club, Adventure Game Club as well, and. There was also one that I think gets updated like very rarely. There was one called, I think, The Men of Low Moral Fiber, which is another Venture Game podcast, which I found randomly ages ago.
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, but so there's quite a few out there. But if you do a search for adventure games on Pocket Casts, a lot of them are dominated by Dungeons and Dragons related podcasts,
get lost
down
in the mix. But there is as well for Spanish speakers. There's a Spanish podcast, I believe it's simply called Point and Click. And that's a really nice podcast as well. One of the people involved in that, he does the Adventure Games of the Year every year. Now the last 2 years. And then there is the Gaming Outsider, which is deals with more general stuff, but they also deal with adventure games and FMV games and narrative games as well. So so plenty of people to listen to if you like adventure games.
Yeah, so once you've listened to every single one of these,
yeah,
a few times,
all 200 plus episodes of these, you can, then we'll allow you to go through those episodes.
Yes.
No, but it's great to see so many as well, and I listen to as many as I can as well, and they're great. So hopefully we'll have more. Hopefully we have more episodes. So that is it for news. Now before we get to the games, we are on Patreon. So this is an independent run podcast. It's very independent. It's just kind of us and who run it. And if you want to help support us and help as a result support Adventure Games, you can go to patreon.com/Adventure Games Podcast. We have, as we just mentioned, so first of all, these episodes and our interviews will be going up at least 24 hours earlier than they go up publicly. We also have extras, such as what Kieran mentioned. You can listen to Kieran talk about his top 10 games, and it was quite lovely, Kieran. Thank you for that. I would generally recommend people to listen to that if you are on Patreon, that you just went into detail talking about all the games, the top 10 games that you enjoyed playing as well. And there's other ones, there's other extras as well. There's a 10-minute conversation that I had with Ken and Roberto Williams. We speak to them before my official interview with them. Just chat with them before we... Now, they knew we were recording. It wasn't that, they didn't know. It was recorded on their end, so they're aware. And a few spoiler chats with developers as well. So you can head on over. We did get a new Patreon subscriber called JR, who just subscribed before we started recording. So thank you, JR, and I hope nobody will shoot JR. Who shot JR? Well, what is that from again? Is that from Twin Peaks or something?
That's Dallas.
Dallas, yes.
If anyone does shoot JR, then at least we'll put the walkthrough to find out who shot JR. Patreon only.
Well, hopefully not him, hopefully.
Yes.
But in all sincerity, thank you. Thank you to all the Patreon subscribers and to just anyone who listens. There are other ways you can help as well. You can also buy, first of all, listening. You can share these episodes as well. That really helps. And you can get in touch. You can get in touch. We are on social media. We're info@adventuregamespodcast.com. And yeah, so that's... just thank you to everyone for your support and listen as well. And finally, again, these few seconds just allowed me this. And again, you guys can see it on video, but we were nominated, but we actually got an award. Don't know if, oh, no, you can't see it.
The important thing is, Josh, you think there's an award there.
Yes, no, we got a lovely word was sent to my home, but it belongs to all of us. It's we were nominated for the podcast awards, Games and Hobbies, and it sent us this very nice trophy. So I don't know, maybe an Adventure X I can bring it. So if you guys, but we'll see. Thanks to you guys for your immense help and people listening and voting.
I'd be bringing that everywhere, Shawshire.
Absolutely.
I'd be proudly shaking it in the air wherever.
Absolutely.
You go to the shops, you got your award with you.
Yeah. You go in Avenger X. Don't you know who I am? I am award runner up.
Oh, well, I think we can say award winning now. Yeah. but huge thank you. And again, you can vote again this July. Just a heads up for people. Anyway, shall we talk about games that we've been playing?
Yes.
Matt, before myself and Kieran talk about the games we've played, you mentioned Perfect Tide Station to Station. So I presume you played the first game.
Yes, I have.
And you're a fan of the first game, I take it.
Very much so, yes. It's a fantastically well-written game story with a protagonist. We've like one of the most relatable protagonists in an adventure game. One of the best teenage-written characters in the whole genre, I think. Very realistic. I think a lot of people will like see very infuriating character as well. She's that realistic, like a lot of the dialogue and decisions are very infuriating, deliberately so. And yeah, it's just an absolute brilliant piece of story writing. So yeah, when it was announced, so when this sequel's announced, I was like, yep, gonna have to go and get this one. And basically, the only reason I played the demo was, I think, earlier in the day before I played it, Laura had her interview with Meredith Gran about this, and I didn't realise the demo was out. So I kind of played the demo before that interview, which I think Kieran watched whilst on the whilst on the train.
That's dedication. Oh,
I love the first game and really wanted to listen to that interview. And so it was the horrible train Wi-Fi cutting in and out, but I was getting the occasional sentence and it was still worth it.
Was it your game of the year when it came
out? Oh, game of my life. It was wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, so we got, two people really excited for the sequel. Have you played the demo yet, Kieran?
I haven't. I just want to play the full thing when it comes out. Fair enough. So I don't need hyping up.
Yeah. But so I played the demo of it, and it's just the first. So like I think the first game was kind of broken up. So you've got like four seasons. So like spring, summer, fall, winter. And I think the second game is going to be like that as well. But there are kind of, in the first game, there were days. So you'd have like about 4 or 5 days in the seasons, and the same thing's happening with this game where the demo is pretty much the first day of the first season. For anyone who's not familiar with the game, you play you played a teenage, like 15-year-old, 16, just about to turn 16, called Mara, who lives on like this like small island off the coast of the US, like a touristy like place, very trapped, kind of like isolated, kind of frustrated, grown up like teenage girl. And we jump to 3 years later, where she's now 18, and now at, I think, college in an unnamed city called The City, but there is plenty of stuff in the demo which suggests it's based on New York. And she's now kind of commuting to the city and back from Perfect Ties, the island, but she's constantly kind of crashing on her friend's sofa, and she's just basically studying film studies of media in college. And you just navigate life that way, in a very similar way to the first game. And the demo kind of just allows you to kind of catch up where she is as a character, how different she is. She feels a lot more mature, but naturally so, but also still very introspective. And yeah, I don't know how I don't know how to not spoil it for anymore. Spoil the first game, basically. But yeah, it's in terms of actually how a demo works, I think it's a very well done demo, or at least it's the first day is pretty much very, very well done in terms of reintroducing this character. So she's very familiar, but she's also very different. Like the gap from 15 to 18. In real life, so it's amazing how much of a difference that can make for a person, and it feels very realistic. But there are still shades of the same character there. It's about 15 minutes in, you're like, yep, that's the character from the first game, still making similar mistakes. And it starts to incorporate new game mechanics, which builds, like, so the first game was very similar to an event like Sierra or game where you're walking around like just like one map, which changes throughout the season, but it's like a point and click game, and it's very similar to here. But now you've got kind of like a phone which will store topics and people to bring up again. You've got a new mechanic where, because she's now in college, she's got to do assignments, and she now has to, and you now have to write like papers, but you can have a topic and a subtopic. And you get the option in the demo. You have to write one about music, but you can choose the theme that you're around it. And according to the interview that Laura did with Meredith, that those kind of topics that you write about can be different and perhaps can slightly have an impact on the story and everything. So it's a very, yeah, there's a lot more to it from the first game, and it's building on what was a good foundation. So yeah, I just left it being really excited to play the rest of the game. So
fantastic. So the demo did its job.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
and then some. Yeah, by the way, we should mention Laura Cressup on Twitch and YouTube. You can see interviews that she's done with loads of people as well, including Meredith Grant, developer of Perfect Ties. But yeah, I think what's interesting about this game is how everyone, including yourself, Matt, and Kira, say how well you can relate with the character, because she's, in the first game you mentioned, she's a 15-year-old girl living in New York. And at first glance, you might think, well, we might all relate to that, from different parts of the world and that. And but obviously, she's done something right, the developer, because so many different people have said that they can relate from different parts around the world. So it does seem to be something, but I really do need to play it.
The first game delves into kind of joining online communities.
Yeah.
Based on stuff and online fan fiction communities, or writing fan fiction and making friends and relationships over the internet. And
yeah, there's a few games like that. One of the games is Videoverse, which I haven't played, which seems to be like about that as well. And but yeah, no, I joined an online kind of e-wrestling community back in my teenage years.
Was you an e-fedder?
Yeah, well, I was one of the moderators for one of the sites. That was the writing that I did. I can't remember what they were, but I have, my wrestler was named Solid Snake. Very creative I was.
mine was called Judgment. He was like the facest. Ooh. He's the facest face you could ever be. Like all dressed in white leather and play by the rules, and like protect, like ran to protect anyone. Run it, like basically if anyone was getting squashed, he'd run out to try and protect all the newbies and stuff, and was in a massive feud with a wrestler called The Equalizer, who was basically a mixture of The Undertaker and Kane, but then like 100 times more sadistic. So yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, man, I've not thought about that in years.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm curious to go back to see whatever happened to the e-wrestling. I don't even know the name for it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like role playing, but not really. But yeah, but no, fantastic. So Perfect Tide, Station to Station. We don't have a release date yet, I don't think. But the demo is out now on Steam. We'll include links in the show notes.
In the interview with Laura, I think she tentatively said 2025.
Okay, so I still have time to play Perfect Tide.
Play it now.
Yeah, no, I know. I should. I'll really try. I've got a number of other games that I'm playing, but anyway. Perfect Tide, Station to Station is a sequel, and Perfect Tide, as you heard from Matt and Kieran, that we should play that game as well. So thank you, Matt. So, well, actually, I've been playing two games. First game I'm going to talk about very, very briefly is a game that was released. Actually, it was released in 2023 on Steam, but it's recently it's been released on a Nintendo Switch. It is called Looking Up, I See Only a Ceiling. And it's developed by Silver 978 and published on Steam with IndieArk. And I believe Flynn Arcade published on Nintendo Switch. It's a short game. And so it's kind of very difficult to talk about without giving spoilers. I'll do my best. So you play as a young girl / woman. So again, similar maybe in some ways to Perfect Tides, but this girl is a little bit older. She is studying for a biology exam, and she wakes up, and the first thing she says is that she wants breakfast. So you need to move around the house to go to get breakfast and have coffee. And then odd things start happening, and not everything may be as it seems. And you see some calendars, and I mean, it's very hard to say some more without spoiling, because it is quite short. So it's very mysterious. You don't really know what's going on. The gameplay is first person usually. You have different hotspots that are very clearly marked on the room. So you can click on the hotspot and you get an interaction with the items. And then there's an arrow signs, or there's an eye that you can investigate further. There's arrows that can go out of the rooms. Sometimes rooms are locked, or sometimes you say, no, I need to go here. So, for example, you try to go anywhere else before having breakfast. You say, no, I need to go to the kitchen. And then, so puzzles aren't the main thing. There's only one thing that resembles a puzzle, is that you need to find a key, but that was quite easy. The main thing is about the game, about the story. And again, it's very hard to talk about. Overall, I think it did a good job. It's some parts are up to your kind of leaving it up to you. It's kind of like a psychological mystery. And there are different endings. If you get the good ending, there is a nice option, which I liked on the main menu, which is an explore option. And you can explore the house afterwards. And this is kind of what happened afterwards. And you go around the house then anywhere you wish. And you can interact with the hotspots then as well, but you don't really have the same kind of pressure as such. You can also get a bad ending. The graphics is kind of like a comic book panel. They're all static images. So again, it's nothing truly spectacular, but it's effectively done. I think some of the scenes are quite effective. Music is quite sparse as well. This game was clearly made on a budget, but the developer has obviously done what they could to make it as effective as possible, and it's I quite enjoyed it. It's took me about half an hour, 40 minutes the first time, and then I did go back to play the second time, see if I get the other ending, and that took me about 10-15 minutes because I knew what to do then to get to the ending. So again, I don't think it's anything truly spectacular, but it is quite interesting, and I think it's an interesting exploration of the mind and a psychological mystery. They're trying to figure out what's going on. And I think it's about $2 or €2 on Steam. I could be on Nintendo Switch as well. So something if you wanted to keep yourself occupied for a while, if you're on a trip in particular or whatever, I think it could be fun. It could be good. So that is looking up, I see only a ceiling. And it's available on Steam and on Nintendo Switch. Kieran, for something a little bit different, for going from a short game, you've been playing a long game now as well. Have you been doing lots of chanting? Have you?
I wonder what on earth is the pun even going to be there.
Chat. So
and,
what?
And
is,
it was just. Have you been chanting? Okay.
I didn't take this. I didn't plan this ahead. Do you want to do this? You know how when I reviewed Stray Gods, where I did review in song, until I think was it you and Laura, maybe Thomas shut me down. Do you want to do a review in a chant?
I must say I very much enjoyed seeing the cogs turning as you tried to think of a pun for Sanaa.
I'm very tired. I couldn't think of anything. So
yeah, what is
Chants of Sanaa then, and what did you think? Because there's been a lot of talk about this game when it was released late last year.
Yeah, Chants of Sanaa came out last year. There was lots of hype, and so I did want to play it before the year review, and it was a bit too long, so I couldn't quite finish it in time for that, but I have now finished it and it's brilliant. It's really, really good. So this is a sort of a detective puzzle game. As I describe it, it will make you think of Heaven's Vault. But in reality, it's much more like something like a Return of the Obra Dinn in how it feels and how it plays. So you are not really given very much initial story. You're just a character who's ascending through this tower. And in order to progress, you have to work out the language of the people at the level of the tower that you're currently on. So people might speak and there'll be little speech bubbles, but of course that will be in the language, so you don't understand what the speech bubbles are showing you. You might look at artifacts, you might look at signs, just written down text, in order to see the language which is being used at that level. Everything is done on a sort of slightly off isometric view. It's a slightly different angle for various different screens, and you just click around where you want to go. And then there's some close-ups as well, so you get a good close-up vision of like if there's a painting with some text underneath, you get to see it nice and big. The way that you then work out the languages, because there's multiple different languages on each level, occasionally you'll be prompted to with a whole bunch of the symbols that you've seen, maybe 10 symbols that you've seen, and you'll be prompted with little comics that depict some sort of concept, and you're supposed to match up the symbols that you've seen with that concept. So for instance, if an early thing that you might see is that you might come across a door and there'll be a lever, and you push the lever up and the door opens, you pull the lever down, the door closes, and there's two symbols by those two spots, and you thought, oh, okay, this symbol must mean open, this symbol must mean closed. And then later you'll be prompted with a little cartoon image of something which is open, something which is closed, and you'll match those up. But you have to do a whole bunch of them at once, similar to Return of the Obra Dinn, similar to, lots of detective games now do this because it's a really good idea. So you can't just brute force it. You have to get four right at a time, say, in order for those answers to all be locked in. The way that you solve the different languages feels incredible. It's not like anything else I've ever seen. It's so inventive, because there is working stuff out from context, like I just gave an example of with the open and closed. Sometimes there's then working things out from words you've already seen. Maybe the word as it's written looks similar to another word, and so you say, oh, I know that this word means man, and this word is very similar, so maybe that's woman, or maybe it's animal, or maybe it's boy. It might relate to in some way to the one that I've already seen. There's a lot of understanding the world and understanding how a language might come about, and because it's going to be making sense in some way, and you can use that almost like you might if you ever study linguistics, that these little points where you think, oh, okay, this must be how this developed, even though it's completely invented. And there's number systems which are like nothing I've ever seen, and some of the languages maybe there will be door and then doors plural. One language might do it as the word door twice, another language might do it as door, then a symbol that means plural. One might combine the symbol for door with some other symbol as well. All sorts of different combinations, and they're all done really well, and it all feels fair, and it is just fantastic puzzling from start to finish. Some pretty difficult puzzling in there too, but it's just really, really satisfying. If you enjoyed any of those sorts of detective games or detective-y puzzly games, then I would say Chance of Sennar, pretty much a must play. It is a really, really well done example of that genre. I have one thing which, wow, I don't know why they did it, and they really shouldn't have, which is there is a stealth. There is random, uncalled for, offensive stealth sections, which add absolutely nothing to the game. I mean, luckily there's not that many of them, but wow, they didn't need to be there. When you're puzzling, you're having such a great time, and then there's just these stealth sections that appear out of nowhere, and it's just eye-rolling and pointless. Just any other developer take this, just scrap those stealth sections. They don't need to be in.
Yeah,
in the game.
I don't like them myself.
the detective, have confidence in that your ability to make these wonderful puzzles and these detective and this world building, because that's all you need. That was the brilliant game that is there, and it slightly gets held back slightly by the stealth sections. There is a story, probably. I know there's been discussions on the, and there's even, I think there's a guide on Steam which fully explains the story. But this sort of comes about, you have to be paying very close attention. By the time it got to the end, I knew how it was being set up. It was very clear. If you go and do these extra steps and these extra puzzles, you're going to get a good ending. If you just finish the game now, you're going to get a bad ending. And I didn't really care. I enjoyed the puzzles. The story seemed to be hidden under many layers of interpretation that I didn't actually care about that so much. But wow, the puzzles are brilliant. If you like detective games, if you like puzzle games, play Chance of Sinar. It's fantastic.
But fantastic. I mean, kind of when you say it's Return of the Obra Dinn meets Heaven's Vault, which is kind of probably the lazy way of, or certainly the way I'm interpreting it. Speaking of detective.
Oh, definitely. But, yeah. But it's that. It is
and I'm
Return
sure
of the Obra Dinn
as well, yeah.
meets Heaven's Vault is what I would say that is. Absolutely.
But they're fantastic, apart from the stealth sequences, unfortunately. But just seeing the screenshots here and the trailer, it looks beautiful. It looks very different, very colourful.
Yeah, lovely sort of minimalist art yeah. style. Yeah, it's very pretty as well. And the soundtrack is really nice as well. It never grated, the soundtrack.
That's great to hear. So, well, I'm delighted to hear it. I believe that the story that you mentioned, the universe or the language is inspired by Babel.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. I mean, to the extent that it's in a tower and it's about languages, maybe.
I mean, I don't know if that's a spoiler, but it's in the Steam page that the developers themselves have put, so...
Yeah, I mean, the actual... Yeah, the story of the Tower of Babel, maybe.
Well, Chance of Sinar... it's available on Nintendo Switch, I believe, and PC. So it's on Steam and Nintendo Switch. Would this be a game that you could play on the Switch easily, do you think?
Yes, I think so. It's entirely point and click.
Perfect.
Yeah, especially, yeah, on a Switch, definitely easy.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Kieran. And now for the final kind of adventure game that we're going to talk about. I played The Light in the Darkness. And this was originally released on PS5 in 2023, I believe, and it was released at the end of January this year on Steam. And it's now it's a game, it's about the Holocaust. Now, and I know people, you know, listening might be thinking, oh, good God, do we really need a game right now with everything going on in the world? Well, first of all, what I will say is that the story is told very sensitively. There's nothing really graphic or exploitative or gratuitous. This game was designed, it is available for free, and it's designed because the developer, I believe, is Luc Bernard, who's a Jewish French person, made it so it could be used at schools and universities to teach students and kids about the Holocaust and what happened. So it is, you play as kind of a family. Now you play mainly as the child Moses and his child Samuel and dad Moses and the mother Bloom. They're Jewish immigrants from Poland who are living in France. The game begins in the 1930s, and it starts out with their lives. You know, the child goes to school, you meet his friends, you play games in the playground, and then you meet your dad Moses, who owns a clothes shop, he's a tailor shop, and you see a customer. And then, the Nazis then invade Poland, and the mother Bloom receives a letter from her mother, who said that they have to go into hiding because they're wanted to escape from the Nazis. And then the Nazis invade Paris, and then the family have to make decisions to see what do they do. Do they stay? Do they go somewhere else? Now, there's not a choices matter. It's a pretty linear game. The game actually starts off, which I didn't know about this, but at the Evian conference, which was a conference with world leaders in, I believe it was 1938 in France, to try and see what they could do to help the Jewish people. But unfortunately, tragically, they didn't come to an agreement. So many countries didn't accept Jewish refugees, and that's why a lot of them just didn't leave, because they couldn't. The story is very, very well told. I thought it really, really you know, it puts you in the shoes of this Jewish family who are normal people who are just trying to live and get on with their lives. And then it is very, very sad how you can see throughout the game that people turn on them after all the propaganda. And the game is, the graphics are very interesting. The characters, their eyes are very exaggerated, but it made me that it's very expressive. And I think it kind of works because you can see, you know, when they're happy or when they're sad or when they're afraid as well. And it's, you know, it's a very, very tough subject matter, but I believe that the developers have done an excellent job in dealing with it. There are some very powerful moments. You know, it doesn't shy away from, you know, what happened, but it doesn't, you know, as I said, it's not gratuitous. It is a game that you could play with children, depending on how old the children are. And it could help them kind of understand what happened, because there's a powerful moment in the game where it plays the Marseillaise. And I won't give away what the scene is, but the Marseillaise, you know, as sure everyone's aware, it's a very, you know, bombastic national anthem. But this time it's played very slowly, and it's very, you know, it's very, very sad with the way it's played. And it, you know, it's kind of even more shocking. So the story, I thought, it's the way it was told was really, really well done. And I think it is very, very important, especially with everything in the world that's happening now, because, you know, this can help us understand maybe that, you know, people are people, no matter who they are, no matter where we're from, you know, what the color of our skin is or whatever, that we're generally trying to get by, trying to live and try to make the most of our lives. So I think it can help people understand and relate to what the Jewish people went through in the Holocaust and what other people might be going through now who might be targeted because of who they are right now. As a game, I mean, to put, I think that this is mainly to help people, kind of to teach people what happened. There are a couple of, you know, mini games. There was one kind of mini game where you're organizing boxes, which I thought was fun. And I personally would have liked some more, but I can understand why the developers chose not to include more, because it might have taken away from the seriousness of the storyline. Again, if you are looking for a challenging game, this is not that kind of game. It is on the story. There are no real choices. It is a linear game. But there are some mini games. I said you play a game in a playground as the child Moses. There's also, it's interspersed with real footage of what happened. So you have black and white either photos or footage of Nazi soldiers going up the Eiffel Tower, a huge propaganda against the Jewish people on, you know, buildings and theaters in Paris at the time. It took me about an hour, you know, the music, it might be a little bit much, it goes on quite a bit, but I still thought it was good overall. I still thought it was nice overall. And yeah, no, this is definitely a game that will stay with me. And I thought, even though it's only about an hour and 30 minutes long, I thought it was quite fantastic. I think it's an important game that I think I would recommend people to play as well, because, you know, if more people play games like this, there might be more tolerance in the world. I don't know. As I said, it might just show people that people are people everywhere, you know. But yeah, it's the light in the darkness. As I said, it's not the most challenging of games, I think, if you want puzzles, but it's a well-told story, and I really liked it. I think it's a very, very well-made game. It's from Voices of the Forgotten, and it's published by Arcade Distillery. And actually, when I was on the website of Voices of the Forgotten, they also have, I believe, a museum in Fortnite, which kind of threw me. But they have kind of like a museum, I think a Holocaust Memorial Museum in Fortnite, to teach people and to help people learn, which I think is good. You know, people can learn through games as well. So yeah, definitely something you have to be in the mood for, but I would definitely recommend it. It's The Light in the Darkness, available on Steam and PS5. So don't know if you guys have any questions or anything else. But no,
I'm very glad to see developers willing to take on these sorts of topics and these sorts of issues. And
yeah,
because games, especially narrative games and the sorts of games that we talk about, are one way, are a medium of where you can present these sorts of ideas and these histories. And they don't often get dealt with. When you think we have books where you can read and help to understand what happened, and we have films, but it's nice to see that there are developers that are willing to tackle this in games now as well. I'm very glad this is out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important that games can deal with topics like these, because I know that there are some people who will say that games should be for entertainment only. And look, that's fine. People don't have to play this game. But as you said, I'm glad that this game exists. I think it is important to deal with these topics. I've read that people, at least in America, are, you know, more and more don't know about what the Holocaust really is or what really happened, because it's happened now so long ago and survivors are kind of dying now. So it is important. And I think a game, the advantage a game has is it's interactive. So you're literally in the shoes of these people, playing as these people. And it really kind of hits you then, like, oh my God. And the way that these people are written as well, that there's a character in that game that tells them, said, oh, you people are wanting to control the world. And believes the mother says, what do you mean you people? We work in a shop. You know, we just want to send our child to school and get home with life and enjoy it. And yeah, that's what most people want. But the light and the darkness. And I'd encourage people to check it out. So, Kieran, believe that me and Stephen Brown, who writes creatively for the Adventure Gamers, who's at Adventure X, we played kind of a board game at Adventure X. I at least loved it so much that I said, I can't wait another, you know, a year to play it again. So we played it on Zoom, and you were really, really good. You organized everything. You were fantastic. And we played it all. So what is it? I'll let you, because you're the one who bought it. You're the one who played it yourself first. So tell people what the board adventure game that we played.
Yeah, this is strange. I have just found this by chance. There's a company called Cosmos. That's it's like Cosmos, but with a K. And they have been making these board games in a series called Adventure Games.
Very creative.
And the board games, you can play them a single player, or you can play them in a group as we played. So I played one a single player, and I thought, this is actually really good. There's something going on here. And so then I played another one from the series with yourself and with Stephen. And they are board games, but they feel exactly like a classic 90s adventure game. You have all of the art of all the locations there in front of you, that you have to go to. You have characters that move around, you have inventory, lots of things have numbers, and the way the system works is that you look up the numbers in a book, and that tells you sort of the text that you might see. So let's say that there's something in the room that you want to look at. It might have a number next to it. You look up that number, and that's the same as looking at that hotspot. You might have an item, and you might look up the number for that item, and it'll be the same as looking at that. You could, if you encounter another character, you could look up their number to talk to them, or you could combine the numbers. So if you've got an inventory item which is number 12 and a character which is number 37, then you would look up 1237, 1237 in the book, and that would be giving that character the item. Or if there's a hotspot with a number and you've got number 12 and the hotspot is 130, then you would look up 12130, and that's the same as using the item in that hotspot. You can also combine inventory items. It's everything that you did in a 90s adventure game, point and click, is there. And as you do this, the story unfolds. Sometimes it will present you with various puzzles. You can move on to the next location. you end up with an astonishingly large inventory, which is impossible to deal with in true 90s adventure game style. The stories are rubbish, but enjoyable.
Yeah, a little bit cliche, but fun.
It's the first one that I played was the Grand Hotel Abaddon, and it was sort of I thought, oh, this is fun. This is like a sort of ghost story thing, and it's all of your characters are there at this haunted hotel, and within the first few paragraphs, the lights were flickering on and off, and the doors were going crazy, and there were ghosts flying all around the shop. And meanwhile, the person who works there is saying, "Oh, this doesn't normally happen," and things like this. Very silly stuff. It's not serious at all, but it's just good fun. It's just really good fun, and it tells a silly story, and you get to solve some puzzles, and you get to look at the art really up nice and close. And there's some nice art there as well. Yeah, it really surprised me. What do you think of it, Shosho?
Yeah, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. Now, I think it helped because, you know, it was fun, you know, playing with you and Steven as well. I don't know how I would have felt if I played on my own. I don't know if I would have given up or anything because, as you said, you do end up having a huge amount of inventory items / cards. And I think I would have gotten stuck quite early on. And you and Steven were the ones who were driving the game forward. When you were saying, oh, I think, you know, we should do this with this thing that we found 3 hours ago. And I admit, I was like, wait, what? Oh, yeah. But I liked how when we played it, that the characters had different personalities. That my character was the gung-ho, you know, that you have when you, if you click on a hotspot, I believe it says, if you are such a character, you don't put your hand in. But if you are the character I was, oh, yeah, you go in and then you put your hand in and it gets bitten by a bird or whatever. But you get the key. And it drives the story forward. So I like the difference between the characters. And as you say, yeah, the story is probably a little bit rubbish, but in a good way. I had fun with it. It is fun. I think it's probably best played with a group of people if possible. But you played it on your own and you know, you enjoyed it as well. But it's I definitely want to play, you know, again in the series. And we were playing, like, we had several sessions. Now, it was the day after Adventure X that morning that was, I think we were all feeling the after effects.
All of our voices were gone.
Yeah. But when I got home, I thought, I can't wait another year to continue playing. I want to, you know, play it now. So we tried on Zoom, and I wasn't sure it would work on Zoom. Now, again, to be fair, you kind of made it work because you did a lot of the preparation, a lot of the work. You took photographs and you put them up on our Discord channel. And so I think at least one person will have to be prepared to do the heavy lifting, you know, if you are playing it on Zoom, but it is possible. I really, really enjoyed it. I would like to play it again.
It was surprisingly long as well.
It's very long. Yeah, no, it's not a short game. It's because the last time we played, and I thought, oh, it's probably like an hour left. It took about 3 or 4 hours that we played on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I think in total, I think both games took about 10 hours total.
Yeah. So there'll probably be different sessions people will need to play. But I had a lot of fun, and I think if people do want to get together, either playing it in person in a group is probably the best way, did. But if you know people online who like adventure games, or maybe if you don't, maybe they might like it. But if you do like adventure games, especially the classic 90s games, I think people can have a lot of fun with it as well. So yeah, definitely, I had a lot of fun. I think Steven enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, definitely. It was just a good time.
So yeah, so it's Cosmos.
Yeah, Cosmo. There's between 10 and 20 of the games in this series. There's a whole bunch of stories that you can play through. So yeah, really exciting.
Oh, well, we'll have to play again.
Oh, definitely.
So that's Cosmos. I'll include a link in the show notes as well. So that's the adventure game board game with cards, with inventory, story, and characters. But just as a board game. And so thank you very much for that. So before we finish, Matt, you're the reason that you told us that you haven't played many adventure games or games in general, apart from this demo Perfect Ties, because you're playing one game. Which game are you playing that you've been dedicating your the life your life to the last few months.
The evil, evil time succubus that is Baldur's Gate 3.
I'm so tempted to get it, but like you, I'm thinking, oh, I won't be playing anything else for like 3 years if I
Yeah, but I think what I find quite interesting is that there's quite a lot of crossover into the narrative game stuff. So if anyone listening going, we're talking about an RPG, it's...
Yeah, there's a lot of, from what I've heard, there's a lot of choices and narrative, as well as RPG elements, you know, like combat and leveling up and all. But what would, if for anybody who likes adventure narrative games, what do you think they would make of Baldur's Gate 3?
I think they'd like it. I think once you get a handle on how the kind of combat works and how to kind of get through it, a lot of kind of the stuff like the checks and stuff works very similar to Disco Elysium, which I've then recently learned that Disco Elysium takes a lot from, well, the dice checking is from Dungeons and Dragons, which I've got no reference point at all. So I'm kind of learning as I'm going on. But once you get from that, you've got quite a very detailed, in-depth story with quite a lot of flexibility in how it's told. I'm playing a character that I created, and then you've got six origin characters, which are like six main companions with very kind of complex. Like their own stories and own developments throughout. So they've all got very unique stories, which also you can actually play as. So any of these characters, you could actually be the player character for. And like, it's ridiculous how complex it goes and how tied they get to the main plot, and just how slight deviations can kind of change how it's been told. So I'm not going to spoil it for people here, but I've just... It's either my own stupidity or a bug, which meant that I've made a very drastic thing that I don't think I should have done. but the game keeps carrying on, so it's... but yeah, I think I'm nearly two-thirds of the way in. I'm nearly at the end of Act 2, and with 50-plus hours into it, and it's still engaging. It's still got a lot of lore to it. And yeah, it's just very well written. The characters are great, and... I'm looking forward to actually starting a game with a different character to try and make some decisions.
So not only are you not tired of it, 55 plus hours in, two-thirds of the way through, more or less, but you're looking forward to starting again. I've heard different people say that, who have played it and are going back and playing it a second time. So clearly, even though it's a very long game, people still want to go back and play it, which I think it's a testament to the quality of the game.
Yeah, there's a player character class called Dark Urge, which has its own kind of backstory. So, I mean, the drawback, I think, with the player characters, not really much in terms of backstory. So it's a kind of classic silent protagonist where you don't really have much agency with the plot, whereas you're surrounded by all these party members with much more in-depth backstories, whereas you're kind of just like a blank slate with only references. You're just like you're leading all these more interesting people around and stuff. Whereas there's a character called the Dark Urge, which has a unique backstory and a different playing style. And I've been reading about, I've not read too much into it, but apparently there's like a whole set that solves that, because there's like a whole backstory on this unique player character, which changes some of the actual story as well. So not only do I need to go play back and perhaps try with a different kind of classic character, there's also the option of actually having a built-in story for your player character as well. So I'm like,
it's incredible what they've managed to. I mean, just even reading the reviews on Steam, I mean, not even reading reviews, people have been playing over 100 hours, 172 hours, 936 hours. One person. Oh my lord. I don't think I've even played 936 hours ever on games as much as I play. Probably I have, but it sounds incredible. And I think it sounds like it's well deserved all the accolades and Game of the Year awards that this game has won. Which is great because they seemed like really great people at Larian Studios as well. And I believe when they won latest award, with all the layoffs and everything, and I believe they said, yeah, we don't, you know, or something, or I could be misquoting, but they said, yeah, we don't dedicate this to our shareholders. We dedicate this to our players and our fans. And you'd think that you'd hoped people, you know, say that, but with the way the industry is going, it's nice. But they seem like really nice people as well at the studio. So it's fantastic to see.
Yeah, very strong voice cast. I mean, the principal cast, like the six main cast as well, have done like loads of stuff in person with each other. The Adventure Gang crossover is Samantha Beard. There was in Hobbs Barrow as Thomasina Bateman.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. So this is now available on Xbox as well, PC and PS5, I think. We'll see. Maybe we could, because it's multiplayer as well, I believe. You can play up to four people together. Not sure exactly how it works, but I don't know, maybe...
Who plays games with other people?
Yeah, exactly. Kieran, Mad Steven, you know, imagine playing games and Whispers in the West, which we need to get back to as well.
People don't play point-and-click adventure games to be social.
or you could play on your own, like Matt. Yeah. So that's Baldur's Gate 3. So that's that mini review, which is not an adventure game, but story heavy and just fantastic game all around sound. So, thank you to you both. Kieran, are you playing? Are you planning on playing anything, other adventure game or otherwise?
I've just downloaded the old Phoenix Wright trilogy. Maybe it's the detective feeling of Chance of Sennar. I just want to be doing some detective work.
That's funny because I am playing the great Ace Attorney Chronicles, the latest one that was released on Nintendo Switch. Now, that was released a few years ago, and I started playing it, and then I stopped, again, not because I didn't like it. It's a very long game, and it's playing others. But on a journey at the weekend, I went on the plane Switch. The Steam Deck was too big, so I brought my Switch with me, and I started playing it, and now I'm back in on this game, the great Ace Attorney Chronicles, and I'm really enjoying it. So once I finish it, probably in 7 years' time,
I've never played them. Like, I've got no.
Oh, they're a lot of fun. I've
got no idea how they play or whatever. So, like, they're a blank spot for me.
And
so.
if anybody has a Nintendo DS, you can literally shout objection into the Nintendo DS, which was a lot of fun. But just don't do it on a bus or a train. You let people look at you. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Hopefully, you could review that game. And Matt, are you playing anything apart from Baldur's Gate 3, or is that going to be taking up your time?
Yeah, that's just taking up my time completely. Then again, though, I am kind of starting to delve into like visual novel engines, so I'm attempting my own I'm tending to write my own kind of interactive fiction. So I've been doing all sorts of things with that. But it's still early days for that. So
very nice. Well, look, I hope you tell us best of luck with that, and I hope you I'm sure you'll tell us more about it, and I'm sure we'll give you a very fair review in this podcast.
How much? how much do you accept for bribes?
Well, we'll talk later.
Edit that bit out, will you?
No, but of course we are. You know. No bribes here. If anybody wants to send a donation to my bank account in the Cayman Islands, I can let you know. thank you very much, guys. And I hope to speak to you again soon. Kieran, look forward to hearing your thoughts on Phoenix Wright Trilogy and whatever else you're playing. I'm playing different games. I haven't finished any really. I'm playing Twilight Oracle, which I hope to review. I know Johnny Nice has finished it and Laura has. I'm also playing Alan Wake on my PC. On my Steam Deck, I'm playing a football drama, which is an adventure game about a football manager. Once I finish that, I'll give my thoughts on that. I'm playing football drama. It's kind of like a role-playing, kind of like with cards as well, kind of like throw the dice as well a little bit. I'm playing Murder on the Orient Express on PS5. And as I said, on the Nintendo, I'm playing The Great Ace Attorney. So a lot keep me busy, but I haven't finished a lot in a while. So once I do finish them, I'll talk about them. So So thank you to you both, and I'm sure we'll be chatting very soon. Thank you everyone for listening and again for your support, and feel free to get in touch with us. We are on Discord and on Twitter, and yes, on Threads, but I don't know what I'm doing there yet. So we will speak very, very soon. There'll be interviews coming up with different developers, with the voice actor Cyrus Nemati and his upcoming vampire game that will be coming out in June. Well, the game will be at least, and other interviews that I'm doing as well. So I think, so take care, everyone. And Thomas isn't here. Shout out to Thomas, who's working very, very hard in his day job, so he can't make it, but hopefully back soon. And as he would say, keep on questing.
If you like the Adventure Games podcast, then please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Please leave a review on iTunes if you can, as every review helps, and reviews will help get the word out, especially for adventure game developers who appear on the podcast. Now, you can also follow me on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at Advent Game Pod. You can follow me on Facebook at Adventure Games Podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram at Adventure Games Podcast as well. And we're also on Discord at Adventure Games Podcast. So if you are a adventure game developer or a adventure game player, you can follow us there. So again, please feel free to retweet and share podcast episodes and the podcast to people who you believe may enjoy it. And you can also find more information about the podcast on www.adventuregamespodcast.com. So until next time, thank you. Thank you.